The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Sitting on a bar stool, kind of short and kind of square, through the foam in his mustache, his voice filled the air. Talking about a state of mind, son. Talking about the state of Jefferson. It's a wave on a dusty road. It's a logger's heavy load. It's a cattle on the hill. It's a range full of thrills. It's a way of life. Settles in your soul.
Yes, it does. It settles in your soul.
Amen, brother.
Morning, everybody.
Morning.
This is Terry Raposa and Wynn Carpenter. How you doing, buddy?
Doing well, and you?
Good. And good. We're here with Chris Kellstrom, Supervisor, District 5 in Shasta County. How are you, Chris?
Good, good. Good morning, everybody.
It is a good morning. And you are listening to Jefferson State of Mind, where you have a cavalcade of truth and a continual soiree.
So, that sounds like some BS.
No, we do have a continual soiree.
All right.
You know, I'm always on a continual soiree.
All right.
Broadcasting live from KCNR, downtown Reading, 96.5 FM, where the music sounds better, and 1460 AM. You can call us at 605-4567, 530, 605-4567, if you have a question or a comment, and we are streaming live on KCNR1460.com.
And we have Liam running the boards and the phone for us.
Hey, Liam, are you there?
I am. I'm hiding.
What's the light out for? What are you doing there?
I don't know why, but the lights are hurting my eyes right now.
Uh-oh. Too much fun last night.
Eight in my eyes. No, I went to bed at like 9:30.
Oh,
so
you did.
I did. I don't know.
Are you like pretty much a...
Are you getting old?
Yeah. 9:30.
I had to be up early.
That's true. You did.
Well, that's true. What, about the crack of seven?
6:15.
Okay. So we are here with Chris Kellstrom, and we want to talk about some things about Shasta County. We have a special guest who's going to call in at about 9:30. But until we get there, Chris, how are you, sir?
Oh, I'm doing great. Every day's an adventure.
There's no sarcasm there.
Can you hear his mic, Liam?
He's way far off of it. I have it cranked
really close to it because I couldn't hear him either.
Kind of like an auction.
Here does, huh?
There you go. Yeah,
there you go.
Now we can hear
that's
you.
That's the voice we want to hear. Anyway, so we're going to get right into things. We've got a couple of questions. I mean, there's a lot of things swirling around about the county. Is there anything you can say about the CEO position at this point?
So the CEO was all handled in closed session, and there was already leaks out of that closed session somewhere along the line. So I feel real uncomfortable saying anything. I don't want to. I would not leak anything that came out of closed session. Somebody has, and somebody did, and I certainly wouldn't want to be a part of that. So there was a press release that was issued addressing that. So I'm just going to leave it at that because, again, I don't, new supervisor. I'm new, but I know the rules well enough that you don't leak stuff out of closed session, and there was several leaks out of closed session.
So then with those leaks, that comes with penalty of some sort, I would assume.
It should. It should come with some pretty severe penalties, actually. I mean, absolutely. There was non-disclosure statements filled out and all sorts of stuff. So
now, with that, does the board sign those?
The board didn't sign a non-disclosure statement. The other people on the other groups did. So,
okay.
Where the leaks came from, I don't know. I mean, I think there's going to be an investigation and we're going to try to find out, but,
okay.
Stay tuned. So,
okay. Well, we certainly will.
Yeah, that's, wow. That's going to be an interesting scenario. I mean, more than a censure, I would think.
Well, it depends on who did it, what can be done. So, something has to be done, and they have to be held accountable, and it has to be public.
Well,
whoever did it.
Yeah, we have another issue, and it's something that I'd kind of like maybe some of you explain to me. There's been an issue going on in Palo Cedro, and I'll just leave it at that. I'm trying to figure out, it seems to me like there are two sides to this things, and what's odd to me is what I do hear and the limited knowledge I have of this is they both kind of want the same thing, and... When I hear these people talking, it wasn't a year ago that they were all mates.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to figure that out. So, Chris, do you have anything that you want to bring up about that?
Or? Yeah, well, Wynn and I are both pretty involved. Wynn's on the Chamber of Commerce out there. So, I know the reason is because I have lots of friends in Palo Cedro. I love the area. I love the people out there. And I just took it upon myself to get involved. And, you know, I've had my first entry into politics, or my first insight into politics, I should say, happened down in Sacramento County. The ex-wife and I had bought our first home. It was in a neighborhood. I've told this story before, but I'll tell again because this is where I'm coming from. We bought our first home, empty field next to us. Before we bought the home, I asked what's going in that field, and he said it's zoned R1, which I didn't even know what that meant in my 20s. And single-family residential. I said, okay. I said, is it more Bennett and Compton homes? He says, you know, I don't know, but it's just going to be more homes, blah, blah, blah. Okay. So the subdivision wasn't even finished yet. We bought our house. They finished up the subdivision. Once all the houses were sold, the city council threw their plan out there and said, oh, guess what? That field's R3 now. They've already taken a federal grant for low-income subsidized housing. They're going to be low-income triplexes, and I'm sharing a fence with them. So, you know, that was my first city council meeting I ever went to. The entire neighborhood goes down to the city council, and I realized right then, even as a young guy in my 20s, this is a waste of our time. We all spoke for our 3 minutes, and that board had already taken the money. It was already a plan. It was already a done deal. They were just waiting for all the houses to sell at top dollar so they'd get the top, you know, tax, property taxes on them. And then they sprung this little plan on us, and there was nothing we could do about it. So the realtor signs went up like dominoes down the street. Every house went up for sale. And, I told the ex-wife, I was like, we're going to have to sell our home. And if we do, we're not buying another one down here. Our daughter had just been born. Let's move back home. So that's how we got up here, which is, you know, a lot of things that happen in your life are bad and they turn out to be great. So that was a bad time, but it turned out to be great. That's what got us back up here. But I know how these things work, and I know when you get a corrupt group of people, or, you know, people with their hand out waiting for state dollars or federal dollars or whatever, you can really get screwed, if you will.
Yeah.
So now we've got this thing in Palo Cedro, and it started out by very similar thing. Came to Cottonwood first. They wanted to put a low-income subdivision out there. And, you know, of course, everybody starts fighting it. And basically they were told in Cottonwood, there is nothing you're going to be able to do about this. Now, this is a different board of supervisors, mind you. And there is nothing you can do about this. This is coming in, and you can't stop it. And the only way Cottonwood got rid of it is we didn't have enough sewer hookups to sustain this. So we were able to get rid of it. And it went, and then we gave Palo Cedro a heads up and said, hey, it's coming your way. You better be careful. So Palo Cedro and Cottonwood, as well as Burney, are unincorporated areas in our county that have a water system, a water district, and a sewer treatment district. So with those scenarios, unincorporated sewer and water, they are ripe for getting low income, all the grants and all the, you know, that's all low income can go into those three areas. So I care deeply about Palo Cedro. I care deeply about Cottonwood. I also care about Burney, but I mean, it's usually they don't go to Burney because it's up in the mountains and no services. So usually Cottonwood and Palo Cedro are where they're going to concentrate their efforts on. Now, right now we have a good board that's going to protect those two communities, but that's not always going to be the case. We're not going to be there forever. Down the road, there'll be another board that'll have their hand out looking for those state dollars and those federal dollars. And, you know, they, quite frankly, we'll either screw over Cottonwood or screw over Palo Cedro or both. So I got involved, and I'm trying to protect Palo Cedro, and I want to do the same thing for Cottonwood. I mean, you know, but Palo Cedro had already started the ball rolling. They had already been working on this since 2018. Once they fought the low income, then they had 168 home development going out there that pretty much all the people were against. They shot that down, and I tried to point out to them at the board meeting, I said, look, you know, everybody has ever been in a fight. There's always somebody bigger and tougher than you. So you guys keep fighting all these things, but you've lost several. You lost the Dollar General. You didn't want that in your community. It's there. You didn't want the windmill torn down. It's torn down. You didn't want the Rite Aid. The Rite Aid's there. There's going to be another fight down the road, and instead of continually fighting, and right now you have the board on your side, so great. You can want to get into a fight. But down the road, you may not have the board on your side. So I want to move forward with this. and, you know, try to do something to protect them. And ironically, I'm going to read you a text that I got from one of the people involved, a very good friend of mine. I have the utmost respect for him. In fact, he would probably be one of my first picks to be on this advisory committee. And he says, I think it's a good time to rescind this PC thing, get a clean slate, and move forward in a more appropriate fashion. And that is exactly what I did. That's exactly what I thought I did on Tuesday's board meeting. Yet this same individual's wife basically attacked me at the board meeting. And now I have a group of them out there that are like telling me, I mean, accusing me of all sorts of things. And I'm like, I'm trying to help you people. I have spent hundreds of hours trying to help you. I'm doing exactly what you suggested, and I'm the bad guy. So welcome to politics, I guess. I don't know. I don't know. But I want to send out a flyer or a questionnaire to everybody in Palo Cedro. Now, a lot of the people in the chamber are not Palo Cedro residents. Obviously, I want everybody's advice. I want everybody's input. If I want to put it online, I want to, you know, we can go to the Honeybee Festival, set up a booth, whatever it takes. I want everybody's opinion on what they want. Ironically, the two sides want the same thing. And, you know, I'm talking on the phone with one of the, you know, people, I'll just say on the chamber side, for instance, another very good friend of mine that
can
I have utmost respect.
The jurisdiction of the chamber, because you said that people don't always necessarily live in Palo Cedro that are on the chamber. How does that work?
So it's the greater Palo Cedro Chamber of Commerce, greater area Palo Cedro Chamber of Commerce. So people out in Millville can be on the chamber. People in, you know, East Reading can be on the chamber. I mean, I can have people that are of the area that, you know, have a dog in the hunt, so to speak, for Palo Cedro.
Okay.
So it's like, I want everybody's input. I made the motion that I want to work with Mary Rickert and the county and all the citizens, you know, get all the citizens' input, and then pick an advisory committee of either five or seven citizens, whatever it is, and, you know, from both sides of this equation, so to speak, and then get everybody's input. And I want to send out the questionnaire first. Everybody wants the same thing. They want to keep Palo Cedro, Palo Cedro. I want to keep Palo Cedro, Palo Cedro. They want it rural. They don't want 24-hour businesses. They don't want big box stores. They don't want low-income housing. They don't want high-density housing. They all agree. This is what they want. So how do we get there? You know, and again, the suggestion here was clean the slate and start over. I clean the slate, and now I'm trying to start over, and I'm being attacked. It's like, whatever. Welcome to local politics.
Well, I'm trying to figure out from what you said, and thank you for explaining that, and maybe our listeners are clarified on what's going on out there. The thing that kind of blows my mind a little bit is it seems as if everything you said, both sides want the same thing. I'm trying to figure out what's the rub.
And right now, well, I mean, the rub is how do we get there? That's the whole thing.
Okay.
So there was a group that was the Chamber of Commerce, the old Chamber of Commerce. They've all termed out now, but they formed a group called Envision. So this group was moving forward with, you know, what do we want? What do we want to see? How are we going to do this? And they took a grant to fund this rezoning. Well, somebody, a good friend of mine, read through the entire grant and read through all the little fine print, and he got a little nervous, which understandably, and he says, well, there's a little stipulation in here that says during the administration of this grant, the terms could change. And he's like, wait a minute. You know, and he doesn't trust the state, and, you know, God bless him, I don't either.
Rightfully so.
You know, and so he's like, wait a minute, this, they might say, oh, well, originally the grant said 10% low-income housing, now it's going to be 80. So, and now you're in the middle of it, you've taken the money, so you're going to have to go with our new plan. So the group's kind of fractured at that point. Half of them said, oh, no, we can mitigate this, and the other half said, no, I'm not trusting the government. So I actually was, you know, more friends with the other side, but I couldn't figure out because there were some people that I had a lot of respect for that were, you know, on the Envision side, so to speak. In fact, we all know one of them, and I won't mention names, but I'm thinking, man, he's an awful sharp cookie, and why is he not going to be fooled? So the two sides fractured, and, you know, and then the mudslinging started, and they started throwing mud back and forth at each other. So I would try to talk to both sides, and as soon as they would, you know, deteriorate down the path of mudslinging, I would just kind of stop them or ignore it and just say, what do you want? This is, you know, can you agree with this? Can you agree? And so mudslinging was going on with both sides. And, you know, now it's like, okay, let's just trash the original plan. The grant was pulled off the table a year ago. So the grant, that was the major sticking point, and it was thrown off the table. But they still couldn't decide anything, even though the grant was out of the picture. So now I'm like, all right, let's just throw this whole thing out, you know, and start all over again and just take another approach at this. And I thought that was a pretty good compromise, but apparently not. I don't know.
Anyway, we have a caller on the line. All right. Randy, what say you?
Hey, good morning. I'm a lifelong resident of Shasta County and grew up in eastern Shasta County, went to school out in Central Valley, and most of the people I've known in my life have been from this what we'd call low income level. Like construction workers. We've worked in the woods and mill workers, and there have been people that I've known in my early life back in the 50s. Some people would be living in cars because that's the way they chose to live, and in tents, and everybody got along with it. They didn't really care about that back then. You know, there wasn't as many people, and there was not a problem. But now, you know, what I'm listening to in your talk, Mr. Kjellstrom, it sounds to me like you're positioned against low income people. And I know you might not intend that. And I know that there's, you know, the things have changed since the 50s, and now we have a lot more problems, you know, social problems. And I'm all for, I think we all want the best for everything, and I would like solutions for income, but I'm really concerned about the table being switched to give like a more of the top end of our resources to the people with the most money. And I think that we live in this one world, these resources, this whole world belongs to us. From the poorest people to the richest people, and I think that we should be focused on making life better for all of us.
No, Randy, No, I just wanted to weigh in a little bit on this, and we do have a Liam has a comment. Our producer has a comment about this, and I want to let him weigh in a second, and then I'll come back to you. Okay.
Okay, I'm going to give up the phone and listen on the radio. Thank you so
okay,
much.
Okay, sounds good. Go ahead, Liam.
Well, the hard part is there's different kinds of homelessness. You know, there's people sleeping on the street doing drugs, and then there's people sleeping in cars trying to scrape by. And one is way more apparent, way more seen than the other, so there's more conversations around it. And so it's not that Chris is against low-income people. Of course Chris isn't against low-income people. It's just the people that are, like, methed out sleeping on the streets. I don't think anyone really wants that.
So, Randy highlights my point. I said the communities of Cottonwood didn't want the low-income subdivision, and the community of Palisadero did not want the low-income subdivision, and the people in Palisadero, both sides agreed they didn't want the low-income subdivisions and the high-density housing. I didn't say myself, Randy, but as usual, I get blamed for whatever
well,
was said.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I want to interject. It comes with a job.
I want to interject on that, because you're absolutely right. He said the communities... He is talking about the other people, and what I don't like is people going after one particular person when he's basically the messenger on this thing, Randy. It's not a thing where he's discussing what his beliefs are. I know Chris. I mean, and frankly, you know, I know what it's like to be low income. I know what it's like not to have any money. I know what it's like to be in a position to where I don't have any place to live. I know what that's like. You know, I know what it's like to lose a job and to have kids and not have anywhere to work. I know what it's like. Chris has been a hard worker, middle class worker his whole life. The only reason he's doing this is because people tried to talk him into it because they knew he had a good heart and he was the kind of person that would lead. And he'd lead from the front. He didn't want to do it. He did this kicking and screaming. And I'll just say it. And that's what we need is more people who have the testicles. I can say balls, can't I?
Marble.
That'll get out there and do this stuff and stand up and stand behind their word instead of just talking. You know, but the thing is that really and truly, I guess where my frustration is, and this is nothing personal to anybody, when we have a guest on or somebody speaking about something, it seems like they hear one word and they don't hear the sentence. It seems like they're hearing one part of that, but they don't hear the message. What we have to start doing is listening. God gave us two ears and one mouth. And with that, I'm going to give it back to Chris.
Yeah, so anyways, welcome to my world. But yeah, I mean, I grew up in a blue collar neighborhood. I mean, I obviously have nothing against blue collar. I have nothing against working poor, so to speak. Nothing whatsoever. But a government subsidized, you know, nobody wants it in their backyard. You know, NIMBY. Nobody wants it in their backyard. Not my backyard. So, you know, there is a huge difference between a blue-collar working-class neighborhood, which I grew up in, and, you know, a government-subsidized housing project. Quite a big difference. And nobody wants that. I mean, that's, again, that's why we put our house up for sale down there. It wasn't anything against the people in there, and God bless them. I mean, great. I'm glad you got some help, but, you know, it's going to make my property value at that time drop down, you know, 15%. And it's like, whether you like it or not, whether you agree with it or not, that's just the way the world works, and that's the way it is. So the communities of Cottonwood did not want a low-income subdivision, a government-subsidized subdivision right in the middle of the neighborhood. Everybody's for affordable housing, absolutely. You know, I have a daughter who's 23, you know, works her tail off 40 hours a week, and, you know, she has to have two or three roommates to afford the rent on one apartment. Yep. And I mean, it's, and that's it is. And so when I get these things, oh, well, you know, we need to do more for these people. And like Liam says, you know, definitely different classes of homeless. When you have criminal transients and we're throwing money at them, mm-hmm. and you're taking my daughter's tax money and throwing it at these people that do absolutely nothing, I have a problem with that. I mean, I know a young person, Liam, I'm sure can tell us to testify. It's very hard for them to make it with the tax structure we have now and with the high prices of everything and with all the extra permits and license and gas fees and everything else you have to pay. It is very difficult for a young working class person to ever get the American dream and buy a home. I mean, you can barely make your rent now. Right. So, you know, again, communities of Cottonwood didn't want a low-income subdivision. Communities of Palisado didn't want one either. I'm not saying we shouldn't help, shouldn't do something, shouldn't whatever, but it is what it is. And I'm a representative of the people, and if the people in Cottonwood don't want a low-income subdivision, well, then I'll fight for them and not have that.
Well, and too, both those communities, the sewer structure, infrastructure, and the water infrastructure isn't there to support it. So, I mean, heck, that's been half the problem. You know, if we're having water issues, you know, even during years that we have an adequate rain for most areas, and we still don't have enough water for something like that, then why would we even consider it?
Yeah, and that's what Cottonwood doesn't have the sewer hookups, and Palisado doesn't have the water hookups. I mean, mm-hmm. Bella Vista Water District is suffering to meet all their customers' needs now. They don't need another couple hundred homes out there.
Right.
They can't do it. And the dirty little secret with the 168 home subdivision they were trying to put in out there, and they couldn't come up with an answer of where they're going to get the water. Well, the dirty little secret is once you build the house and it's in the district and it's been established and people have lived there for 3 years, you can get water from an outside source. You can buy from the McConnell Foundation or whatever the case may be and give those people water, get their water for 3 years. Once they're there for 3 years, now it's Bella Vista's water district. Now they have to supply them with water whether they have it or not. So that's a dirty little secret out there that people
don't understand. Yeah, but where do they get the water if they don't have it?
Well, exactly. So that was the thing with this community, this 168 beds, was like, well, we'll find the water somewhere. There's plenty, and the guy actually says, we're in the middle of one of the worst droughts ever. The ACID canal has no water in it for the first time in over 100 years. And this developer says, well, there's plenty of water out there. We'll find the water. It's not a problem. And it's like, boy, that's a pretty insensitive statement to be making when, you know, the entire South County is drying up and right. animals are dying and everything. Farmers' fields are going fallow and their people are selling off their livestock. But you're out of town developer saying, oh, there's plenty of water. Don't worry about that. You know, and the thing was, they could have probably found water for 3 years. And then once they have it for 3 years, well, now it's Bella Vista's problem. Yeah. No longer their problem. So,
wow. Yeah, you know, the crazy part about this, too, is that, you know, getting back to the community is, again, both sides want the same thing. Yet there seems to be a lot of anger and angst, almost like they're trying to eat their own. I'll just say it because it seems as if they're just.
Absolutely.
You know, it's crazy. I mean, people that were friends, that were helping each other, that were in the community together, all want the same thing. But there's two different sides. It's hard for me to really get that.
Well, I think they need to get together and just have somebody moderate that event, if you will. They get together and they talk about everything that they want. And don't worry about all the stuff that you don't want. Just come up with the common list of everything you want, and you'll see that you're on the same page. You'll see you're on the same side. And then use that information to unify and come together and come up with a plan of some sort, whatever that plan is, to come up with a good, solid plan to protect the Palisado area.
Careful, Wynn. That's exactly what I suggested, and I'm a bad guy now. So,
well, that's the thing, you know. And again, I really respect you, Chris, because I know this is something, just like with Patrick, I mean, he'd rather be home with his wife. shooting some guns and taking care of his animals. And I mean, but you guys stepped up, and what you did is you stepped up because somebody had to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And you held true to your word, and you stepped up, and you did it. And the belief is always in the message, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, with that, we'll go off to our break, and we will come back in a couple of minutes here. Time has come.
For 51.
Let's get it done.
Amen.
Have something you'd like to get painted? Then bring it to Victory Powder Coating. Powder coating is a durable, colorful, environmentally friendly alternative to paint. It's useful in automotive, agricultural, decorative, and high-temperature applications. Victory Powder Coating has become the North State leader in powder coating applications and metal finishing. They specialize in large industrial items like truck beds, agricultural equipment, and trailers. They're dedicated to providing superior work and outstanding customer care. Consider Victory Powder Coating for your next project. Victory Powder Coating.
Retirement may seem to be in the distant future, or it may suddenly arrive overnight. At Stifel Investments, we are committed to working closely with our clients. Planning tomorrow means understanding the challenges of today. Uncertain markets, rising costs, and longer lifespans. As a financial advisor of 25 years, I'm committed to helping my clients achieve retirement success. Let's get started today. This is Susan Eastman, Stifel Nicholas & Company, 244-7199.
If the American people ever allow private banks to control the issuance of their currency, first by inflation, then by deflation, the banks and the corporations that will grow up around them will deprive the people of all their property until their children wake up homeless on the continent their fathers conquered.
We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Revolution has started.
Sovereign Minds, now on Sundays, 10 to noon.
KCNR, 96.5 FM, AM 1460, and hear us online at kcnr1460.com. Hi, this is Sue McClain, the sales manager here at KCNR. And if you've been considering advertising, but you're not really sure where to start, well, you can start with a phone call. My number is 530-605-4565. I can let you know how much our rates are and how we can help. So once again, if you have any questions regarding advertising and how we can help your business, our number once again, 530-605-4565. And thanks for listening to KCNR.
Danger Zone.
Danger, danger. Will Robinson.
That was Sally.
Oh, thanks, Sal.
Welcome to the Danger Zone. I wonder who's going to be entering the Danger Zone.
Everybody.
Oh, you did, didn't you, Chris?
I did, yeah, January 6th.
Damn right. I'll tell you what.
Wait, were you in D.C.?
Yeah. You did because somebody had to step up. Talking about stepping up, our good friend Mark Barrett is on the line. What's new, my friend?
Well, not much, I guess. You know, the state of affairs doesn't change much from day to day. I heard you guys talking about water, and, you know, here we are. I think they're letting, I believe it's 20,000 cubic feet per second through the overflow at Oroville and Folsom Lake. So that's a total of 40,000 cubic feet per second go to the ocean without one single human being able to benefit from that water. And at the same time, the governor of California is preparing curtailment orders for Northern California.
Yeah, we're under two emergency declarations in the state of California right now, one for drought and one for flooding. You can't make this up.
You can't.
No, you can't. I wish you could, but you can't. And it's... it's simply an indicator of worse things to come, quite frankly. I mean, if you can think of these cockamamie things and people swallow them and they're going without water in a time, well, it must be global warming because we've got 5 or 6 feet of snow in the last month. I mean, and it's funny because someone here got a curtailment order. They took a picture of the snow in their field and sent it back to the water board. And the guy wrote back and said something like, well, that might be a little bit premature.
Yeah.
These things, you can't make them up, Chris, and they're the stupidest things you can imagine. And yet, this governor and this legislature with the rats in Sacramento, I thought up a new word just now. They're not Democrats, because my mother was a Democrat. She was a kind and gentle woman who wanted the best for everyone, who wanted the best for themselves. She believed in free speech. She believed in liberty. John Kennedy was an NRA member. That's what a Democrat is in my mind. It's someone that I may disagree with politically, but they're not crazy. You know, they just want things maybe slightly different or in a slightly different way or come to it in a roundabout manner. But essentially, they want good things for all the people involved. But the people in Sacramento aren't Democrats. They're just rats. They're radical, anti-American, theological socialists. And that's what they are. They want to destroy the people of this state by destroying anything that was good and anything that's worth saving about California. And they'll do anything to do it. And they're headed up by the SEIU and the California Teachers Association, who believes in teaching underage children all about deviant sexual practices, and you can't make it up. And then you have 570 state agencies that seem to be dictatorial in their powers because they can do anything they want and they're unelected. They're bureaucrats, but yet they can ruin a family farm by fining that farm $5,000 a day for watering their cattle more than 5 gallons per cow. Or they'll do like they did in Cottonwood and just dry the ditch up totally, and you don't get any water. And by the way, the ecosystem developed around these irrigation ditches is 150 years old. That is an ecosystem in and of itself. So when you dry up that ditch, what else are you killing besides the farm that's on the side of the ditch? In addition to that, flood irrigation and these irrigation canals, they recharge the aquifer. And without that recharge, wells start to go dry. And if you doubt that, look at Lake Red Bluff. When that was dewatered to save the environment, I don't know how you're saving the environment by eliminating a water source from everything that uses that water source, including Lake Red Bluff. All the wells started to go dry. Funny how that works. I mean, water storage above ground recharges the aquifer. It does exactly what it was intended to do, and it benefits everybody, all creatures, all human beings. But yet, we haven't built any new water storage since the 80s. I mean, that's just one thing. That's one thing, and you could even say, I don't know, it's kind of hard to say that water is a minor thing, but that's just one minor thing in the chain of events that leads the rats in Sacramento to want to destroy the state and everybody's life in it.
Yeah, we found out how important those canals were to our aquifers last year. It was actually pretty amazing because there was literally places that were between the canal and the river, and the river had water in it all year long, but the aquifers were not being recharged with the river water at all, and they were going dry. We had hundreds of wells going dry in this area, and it just showed you how much the aquifer, you know, really, the canal replenished the aquifer. I mean, it was really strange to see that the river was not charging the aquifers whatsoever, but the canal was.
Well, that's also something that the water board came up with. They said that having a ditch that's leaky, in other words, just a ditch that's dug in the ground without lining it with concrete or gunite, is not a beneficial use of water. But I have to say, how can you say it's not a beneficial use when it literally benefits everybody and everything in its path and everybody and everything adjacent to it? I mean, my irrigation ditch is about 5 miles long, and it's an old ditch. It was dug in April of 1859, and I have a pre-constitutional water right, which is now subject to the whims of some unelected board, in their minds anyway.
Yeah,
and it is, and it's a proven fact with watershed studies that these ditches will leak about 2 cubic feet per mile, and they feed every tree and every animal, and they recharge the aquifer. In fact, we should be digging irrigation ditches everywhere. We should have recharge ponds everywhere. We should stop the water and slow the water down and spread that water as far across the land as we can possibly spread it, because it benefits not only the humans, but it benefits every single living creature in its path.
We need to have somebody who will spread that message in our legislative body. We don't have anybody that will even say that. We have a person running for Senate right now in Megan Daly that ran on the fact that she believed that we needed to fix our schools and get all this crud out of our schools. And we were on the show, I guess, probably 3-4 weeks ago, and talked about 10 laws that were passed that are older laws from 1999 to 2011 that totally take parental rights away and totally, I mean, our kids are taught how to have sex with anybody at 5 years old, and she never stood up for that. We need somebody who will stand up for stuff, and I hear you're considering that.
Yeah, did you hear that hesitation in my voice?
I did. Yeah. Well, you know, I mean,
loud and clear.
Yeah, well, Chris had the same hesitation, and thank God for it.
Yeah, I am considering it, I'm considering it reluctantly. But look, the rats in Sacramento that own us or claim to own us, and that are ruining our lives and ruining our economy and causing tens of thousands of people to flee this state and tens of thousands of businesses to flee this state every single year, you know, they need to be put on notice. I don't know. Like I said, I've said this before. I don't know Mrs. Daly. I don't know whether she's a good person or not. But what I can say is I don't know of anything she's done. I live in her district, and I've never seen her. I've never heard her talk. I've never heard anything she's championed. I don't know what she stands for. I don't even know what she does. I don't think she's done anything. Now, in fairness, I have to also say that a single conservative can do nothing in the state rat hole. But what you can do is you can stand there on those steps and scream every
Amen.
Single day about the crooked stuff that's going on. I mean, the governor of California, who's swore an oath to support and defend the Constitution, said the Second Amendment was becoming a suicide pact. Clearly, the state rat hole hates the Second Amendment. They hate the Constitution. They hate the fact that you have individual rights. They hate the fact that you have property rights. They really hate the fact that a water right is real property. And they're doing everything they can to submarine this state and tube the economy just to get control of you. That's all they want. They don't really care about the water. They care about the control. They don't really care about the gun. And I've seen that in court. They care about the fact that you can't have a gun unless you ask their permission, and then they'll tell you specifically what kind you can have, how many bullets you can have, how many hoops you have to jump through to have it, when you can have it, where you can have it, how you lock it up, how you use it, how you look at it. It doesn't have anything to do with the tool or the property. It has everything to do with the fact that they want to control every breath you take, every step you make, where your money goes, how much you pay for something, how much money you get, and how much money you get to keep.
Yeah, that's true.
That's what this is about.
That's true, you know, and everything you said is true, and you're right. That would be a tremendous message and platform to stand on those steps, because that's the way Trump won. Like him or not, he won because he went to the people. He got his message out. And, folks, Mark Baird's the kind of man who will get the message out. He's got the courage to do that. And I'm pretty excited about the fact that, you know, that you're considering this and you're willing to stand up for the people. I mean, you know, we take our hats off to our local heroes like Chris Kellstrom and Patrick Jones. You know, Kevin Cry threw his hat in there. A lot of people are throwing their hats in there reluctantly, totally reluctantly. You know, it's interesting about Kevin Cry. If he didn't win, he was going to move out of state. You know, with you, I know you're here for the duration. I know you're here for the people. You know, and sometimes what we have to look at is the message and who will back their message. And, I mean, Donald Trump, what did he do? Take out 19 Republicans? 19 sitting Republicans? So I think, I mean, it's exciting. I know that tomorrow, folks, we're going to, on Mountaintop Media, you'll be able to view this on Facebook. You'll hear it on Apple Podcast, Rumble. We're doing an hour with Mark Baird, and we're going to discuss some of these things that he believes we should do and some of these things that he believes that could be done. And remember, it does start with one man. And I'll leave it with this. there was a little lady way back when the Tea Party started, and Alan Spector was a senator from Pennsylvania, and he was just a complete rhino. And she stood up. She was afraid. She was just, in her eyes, just a housewife. Stood up, looked at him, shook her finger, and said, "You don't realize this, but what you're doing is woken up a sleeping giant." And just the courage to say that, so one person can do something. And Mark, you know, I believe in a lot of things that you say. A lot of people do. A lot of people are wanting to hear more of what you say and what you stand for. So with that, Chris.
Yes, sir.
What do you think that, what was the biggest hurdle for you when you were first put into office that you really had to overcome? That was, what was the biggest hurdle for you, do you think?
You know, I don't know. I'm trying to think of the hurdle. Actually, it's, you know, I try to educate myself as much as possible. I tried to meet with the department heads. I tried to, you know, find out what was going on and learn what was going on. So, honestly, this last vote was probably one of the biggest hurdles, because it's like, holy cow, I'm trying to make everybody happy, and, you know, I realize you're never going to make everybody happy, so, you know, it is what it is.
An epiphany. Epiphany there. There you go.
Yeah.
So, Mark, what do you believe that the people can do to really stand up against this crooked legislature?
Well, I mean, what we've been doing up here for a long time is, and this sounds kind of stupid, but just say no. I mean, you have to refuse unlawful orders. You have to refuse to submit to unlawful bureaucracy that does extra constitutional things. We refuse to kowtow. Many businesses up here refuse to kowtow to the governor's executive order, which, by the way, was an unconstitutional mandate to close businesses. In other words, you could go to the titty bar, but you couldn't go to church, and things like that. You know, you have to say no to it, but number one. But number two, you have to stand, and you have to help the people that are trying to do something about this. And I mean, my hat's off to Chris and Patrick and Wynn and anybody that runs for office. You know, it's a horrible nightmare. I can't imagine anyone would like that job.
Well, and part of that, too, is education, Mark, because, you know, you just mentioned a mandate, and that's what, you know, I try to explain to people. A mandate is not a law. A mandate is a bureaucrat's recommendation, and it's not enforceable. It's not a law. And, you know, if it's a law, you go through the legislative branch and it's signed in the, you know, by the executive branch, whether it's the governor or the president. That's what a law is. And, you know, we needed to educate people, and we tried to educate people during COVID. It's like, these are mandates. They're not laws. You're not breaking the law by not following a mandate. I mean, so education is a big thing there, too.
Yeah, it most certainly is, and that's part of getting your message out, is informing people as to what really their rights are and what things they need to fight and what things they need to obey, and that's the toughest part of this. But in addition to that, in the state of California, we're saddled with this deal, and we are nationally as well. I mean, Donald Trump said it best, to drain the swamp, but we're saddled with this bureaucracy and this infrastructure that was built by state employees unions and funds largely all of the activities of the RAS in Sacramento. And then we have a bond fund structure where, for example, state water bond, SB1, the state water bond, $8.7 billion, not one single cent was used to build any water infrastructure. And instead, the money went to a largely Democratic non-governmental organizations like the Ocean Conservancy and the Santa Monica Mountain Conservancy and idiot things like that. And they use some of the money to build porta potties and trails. And then they donate money back to Democratic candidates to run for Democratic seats in the legislature.
And that's exactly right.
We have this taxpayers funded scheme where the rats in Sacramento take taxpayers' money, give it to the people they want to win. In other words, government is picking the winners and the losers. And unfortunately, the resource counties are always the losers. And then they give money to the people that they want to be the winners. And those people, in turn, are expected to donate a certain percentage of that back to get the RAPs reelected again.
Yeah, they take our money and then they launder it and then they give it back to themselves. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous.
Exactly.
And it goes, yeah. It happens over and over. And when you mentioned the water earlier, I want to get this out there, Mark, because Mark's absolutely 100% correct. It's the state of California that's going to try to curtail our allotments and try to stop us from irrigating. It is not the Bureau of Reclamation. The feds are on our side for the most part. I went up there to the local office here and met with the head of it. And I mean, he's a great guy. He's telling me there should be no reason you don't get 100% of the allotment or 100% of your allocation. And, you know, it disturbs me greatly, and we will see what happens. But when the governor comes out on Monday and extends the declaration of drought, knowing that the numbers from the numbers for the snowpack and everything else are going to come out on Thursday, he comes out on Monday and heads it off the pass, says we're still in a drought, we're still in an excessive drought area, and I don't care what the numbers are. And the numbers come out, we're 200% plus on snowpack. You know, the numbers, there's no reason for us not to get 100% allocation, but it's the state. And, you know, I remind people, if you remember right, the water was literally going over the top of the dam in Oroville, and Governor Brown would not rescind the declaration of drought. I mean, to possibly killing hundreds of thousands of people had that dam burst. You know, the entire town of Oroville and Yuba City and northern Sacramento would have been wiped out with that catastrophic flood. But he didn't care. He needed to hold that power on just a little bit longer, just a little more.
And Mark, you were president of Protect Our Water too, weren't you?
Oh yeah. And I've said this 1,000 times, and we had great people in Protect Our Water, and they worked their fingers to the bone. We risked arrest, we risked fines, we risked all of that stuff. And there were people in there. We had a PhD who was a very renowned scientist, and he was constantly coming and said, look what I found. I found this a study that says the fish aren't in danger, and I would have to constantly remind him. Nobody cares.
Yep.
And he would be crestfallen. Well, yeah, but the science, I said, they don't care about the science. They're inventing the science to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
They don't care about the fish. They don't care about the drought. They don't care about the water. They don't care about the environment. That has nothing to do with this discussion. This is the projection of political power over a population that they perceive to be weak and stupid. And we are weak and stupid in the sense that we don't have enough money to defend ourselves, but we do have the will to defend ourselves, and that's what I'm talking about. And quite frankly, if this state is not reformed pretty much from stem to stern, it is hopelessly broken, and I would just rather see it break up. I mean, I'd rather see a smaller political entity where we can get adequate representation, because the only representation we have now is whatever Los Angeles wants, they get, because they represent one-third of the state Senate almost.
Hey, Mark, you'll appreciate this story, and I haven't shared this with Terry and Wynn yet either, but I was at a water meeting a couple weeks ago down in Chico, and there was representatives there from the governor's office and all these different water boards and water districts and supervisors and yada, yada, yada. And there was a gentleman there, I think he teaches at, I might be in Georgia now or something, anyways. He was the head of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service that came out with the spotted owl declaration back in 92 and shut down all of our mills and logging and the whole bit in 92. And this guy, I mean, I didn't know how to even, my jaw dropped. He's up there and he says, he admitted that that was the wrong decision, and he's sorry. He's sorry. I'm thinking,
He's sorry.
He shut down mills, he shut down logging trucks, loggers, I mean, he shut down the entire North State, basically, Siskiyou County, Modoc County, Shasta County, Lassen County, but he's sorry now. It was a bad mistake. He's sorry.
Well, you know, when Mao killed 70 million of his own people during the Cultural Revolution, somebody went to him later and was talking to him about it, and he admitted, you know, yeah, maybe that wasn't my best idea. and that's how they are. That is actually how they are. They really don't care. They don't care what happens to you and I. They're sorry. I mean, that's great. But a million people have left the state, entire towns in my county, entire communities are literally impoverished and awash with drugs from drug cartels, Mexican drug cartels, Chinese drug cartels, Hmong drug cartels, Russian mafia drug cartels. Young people are disappearing in these drug grows. because they go there to make all kind of money and get murdered instead of paid. Fentanyl is killing hundreds of thousands of people a year coming across the Mexican border unchecked from China. And our governor is just giddy about all this stuff. He spent $27 billion on illegal aliens and less than $1 billion on veterans care. You know, our cities are awash with homeless, crazy drug addicts. And the governor's talking about, you know, if we could just build this 1,000 tiny home project that I really want to see, well, that'll just take care of all of it. I got some bad news for him. That wouldn't take care of 10 square blocks in Los Angeles, much less the whole problem. But yet, these people have their rose-colored glasses on because their lives are wonderful. They're surrounded by armed security. They make tons of money. Most of them retire multimillionaires. Hey, what's the deal? Life couldn't be better, right?
Unbelievable. You know, we have about 5 minutes left with you two, and, you know, I love what you're saying, Mark. And, again, tomorrow on Mountaintop Media, we will be recording this these two episodes with Mark Baird. They'll be available on Facebook. They'll be available on Rumble. All of it will be available probably by Tuesday or Wednesday, we're hoping.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll be able to hear the platform that Mark's talking about. Because, you know, the real deal is getting the message out there. And we have to allow people like Mark Baird and Chris Kellstrom to get their message out. Because even though Chris is a supervisor, his message is relevant to every county in California on water, a lot of the other issues we have, permits, and just like what Mark's saying, I mean, I'll just say this. I don't know of anybody else that has a broader spectrum of what's wrong with California and also has an idea of how to fix it. And, yeah, state split looks more and more
good.
Inviting, doesn't it?
It looks
doesn't
damn it? Good. Yep.
Well, I have to say, we need to go back to a part-time legislature because 24 hours a day, 7 days a week is too much time for the rats in Sacramento. We need about 400 fewer state agencies. We need one state senator for each county so that everybody can have a say about what happens in their future, not just two urban areas in the state of California running the deal for everybody. And quite frankly, those things are unachievable under California's constitution. And therefore, the only way to achieve that is state split.
Amen, brother. Sign me up.
Yep, sign me up, too. And again, excited about the fact that we have some good people who are standing up. We need to support good people who stand up and are standing up because a lot of other people won't. Chris, any last words there, my friend?
Nope, we're good. I mean, quit. You guys can quit praying for rain now. We're good. Yeah.
Mark, we got about 2 minutes. You want to bring us home, brother?
I don't think I can bring us home in 2 minutes. I think this is worse. 2 minutes will cover. But you know, look, all I want to say is it's time to stand. If you don't stand for something, this is over, and this state is a fallen state already. It is untenable for most of the people that live here. And so if we don't do something about this now, we'll all be broke and we'll all be gone. And that's just the way it is. And that goes from CARB to fuel prices to water to these environmental theologians who worship at the altar of sacrificing your family and your economy and your economic viability on the altar of Mother Gaia so that the Chinese and the Indians and the Africans can continue to pollute. We have a governor that makes deals with China. We have people in the legislature that don't give a damn whether you live or die, and you can do something about that or not. And that is a choice you as an individual have to make.
Amen.
Amen to that. Well, my friend, we'll see you tomorrow, bright and early. And Chris, thank you for all you do, and thank you for coming in this morning.
Thank you, guys.
And we will get together soon, and when you can, give us some other information.
Absolutely.
Please do. So, folks, I think that we've got to start understanding that good people are standing up. We need to back them. We need to help them.
100%.
And we need to be involved with them, because both these men use the word we and not I.
There you go.
Time has come.
For 51.
Let's get it done.
Amen.
Have you seen the bill? We all have to pay. It's not our bill. We had no say. You don't serve us. You serve out of hate. But
time has come for 51 in a Jefferson state of mind. You don't know us, you have no clue, and still you're telling us what to do. We don't know you.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.